Welcome, everybody, to The Rad Life, the only talk radio show that takes you along with host and age explorer Rod Gontos on his continuing journey of discovery into life's challenges, opportunities, options, and all the latest and greatest things that come with getting older. The Rad Life is brought to you this week by Your Home for a Lifetime, a company dedicated to empowering you to stay safely, independently, and comfortably in your own home. And now here is your host, Rad Gontos.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to The Rad Life. We are one day before Independence Day. What are you guys doing for 4th of July? Call us and let us know. Actually, we'd love to hear from you. So, you know, you want to call us, you want to scream at us, you want to tell us that, you know, we should stop doing what we're doing, or just, you know, wish us a happy 4th of July. We're really desperate for attention, aren't we today, Paul?
I'm roasting tofu weenies.
You're roasting tofu weenies? You know, you're such a California, honestly, right? Tofu weenies?
Tofu
weenies. There's actually tofu weenies.
Oh, sure.
Do they have flavor or do you have to add flavor to them? So is this your choice or is this something your wife's making?
Well,
you do?
My wife does all the cooking and she's a vegetarian. I'm not. But when your wife's when your cook's a vegetarian, you kind of become one. So.
Okay. So if anybody is interested in dropping off a real, like, all beef, you know, hot dog to Paul today in preparation for his tofu weenies tomorrow, he'll take it. Anyway, if you're listening to us, I have an interesting show, I think, today, and it's something
about financial independence.
Yeah, financial independence, but getting people started young. And I want to introduce my guest, JJ Wenrich, that basically is a fellow San Clementian from down south Orange County. And JJ has written this book that when I saw it on Facebook, and I'm like, well, this is really interesting. What's this all about? And as the word says, if you're watching us on YouTube, you'll see it's basically titled Teaching Kids to Buy Stocks. And then the interesting twist, Stories and Lessons for Grown-ups.
That's the fine print.
That's the fine print. So this is not a color book.
No.
This is not a thing you give your kids so that they could basically get out of your hair. This is supposed to be an engaging process and educational. I like that small print angle, though, because it's really an educational thing for adults, for family. You say families, parents, uncles, aunts, you know, people. And something that you can basically share with your kids. Like, it's supposed to be a collaborative thing with your kids, I think, right?
Yes, absolutely. It gives you a framework for having the conversation with your kids.
Right.
So even if you don't know anything about finance in the markets, it gives you that framework.
So the interesting thing, JJ, is people don't want to have conversation with their kids.
Right. At all.
Let alone conversations about financial anything, right? Other than don't spend it all in one place. What do you mean you need more allowance, right?
Right.
Okay.
Right.
So what, you know, give people a little bit of background about yourself, and then why the heck would you write a book that basically says parents and children should sit together and talk about how they should invest in stocks?
Yeah, I guess I'm paying forward.
And I'm being facetious. I know.
I understand. Yeah. No, I speak sarcasm.
You speak sarcasm well.
We'll do okay.
Yeah.
No, I guess I'm paying forward something that happened to me when I was young, when I was in seventh grade. I had a wonderful seventh grade teacher. And she introduced the stock market to us, and that sparked an interest that I'd already had, but I was just more of a curiosity that I'd had. And she brought a
what subversive school did you go to?
Way in the middle of the country, as in outside of Wichita, Kansas.
Leave your Midwest out of it, Paul.
Yeah.
I see him going for his mic.
You stole my line.
Subversive Midwest. Okay,
right? Yeah. It's the word of the day, subversive.
Subversive. Yeah. I think it's a compliment these days, isn't it?
Could be.
Come full circle.
Right,
Paul.
Exactly.
So that was pretty cool. Yeah. So like, what did you get exposed to at that age? I mean, obviously, it left an impression.
It did leave an impression, yeah. She brought a broker out, and he talked to us, told us that, you know, it's just companies. It's not as complicated as you think. It's about, these are all just companies. When you think of a stock, think of a company instead. And
it's stories. They're all stories.
Exactly.
There's a story behind this.
So is part of this sort of fear or worry or confusion is sometimes also sort of industry driven, like there's a bit of, you know, well, you know, you really need to know your stuff before you get in here.
Oh, like, absolutely.
You know, like there's and I know, and I'm not picking on that particular industry alone, because I think every industry that has professional services in it tends to start doing that. I mean, even in the case of architecture and interiors, you know, it's like, well, you know, we all work on, well, it's not really a cure for cancer, but we think it is. And right. So, you know, the way we package it is almost like you got to really have the what it takes to be involved in this. And I think the market sometimes takes on that little sort of mystery. Like, it actually pays to have that if you're in the industry, because then you need your expert person to do this. Whereas what you're doing with this book is saying, hey, kids.
It's not that complicated.
It's not that complicated.
Yeah, let's take some of the mystery out.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. So that's cool. And tell people a little bit about your professional background, because I think it even adds an interesting layer to this story, is that you actually are...
I'm a financial planner.
Certified financial planner.
I'm a CFP, certified financial planner. In my career, it's taken two roles, really, or two
paths.
Paths, if you will. Yeah.
Okay.
At first, in my career, I was an advisor, a financial planner for families, for just a financial, you know, financial advisor. And so I worked with families, helped them with their investments, their insurance, with everything. And then when I basically got to the point where I didn't want to do that anymore, I wanted to have conversations with more financial professionals. I'm a market geek at heart, and you can only have so many conversations with little old ladies about the markets before you say, you know, I'd like to have a deeper conversation. And so
you had a deeper conversation by writing a book about teaching kids how to
Right. The irony is thick. Yeah. Cause I end up coming.
I was going to ask that, and I thought, no, I'm not going to go there.
Yeah, I'll get there. But yeah, no, so then my career, I spent the last 10 years working with financial professionals, and my conversations were with other CFPs, CFAs, and investment professionals, portfolio managers.
Right.
And I loved it. It was very intellectually challenging. But I also found my role within that was to talk to the public for those people. And so I did a lot.
You were the community outreach for those people. Interesting.
And so I'd find myself at, you know, at a place like the Center Club where, near where we are today, or at Maggiano's across the street. And I'd be talking about what's going on in the market to those little old ladies again, and to their kids and to their grandkids, and found that there's not a lot of folks that are out there interpreting between those two groups.
Translating.
Because
using the word loosely,
No matter what industry you're in, when you start talking to your peers, you start using jargon. And whether we're...
Acronyms, jargon. You're talking within the bubble.
Yep. Right. And so if you can help folks understand that it's not as mysterious as it seems, it's just you don't know some of the language.
So this is really interesting, because you're saying, I did this and I got tired of basically talking to the little old ladies or translating to the common folk, basically, I'm sarcasm. There's going to be some sarcasm on the show today, right? Maybe a little facetiousness too, but we'll see if we can work our way up to that. But you know, it's just ironic, right? Because here you are. Obviously, you had a way about you to do this, because it requires certain social skills, certain people skills, right? To do that. I mean, any industry. I'm not just picking on the financial industry, right? But here you are, and you're like, I'm tired of doing this. And then so you go and say, well, I want to just hang out with my people. And then you go hang out with your people, and then your people go, you know, that's really great. Awesome. We're really enjoying this. Why don't you go talk to those people for us?
Yeah.
Right? So did you ever have a moment after you found yourself basically doing this where you go, well, crap, I guess I have a talent for this? Because it requires a certain mindset. It requires a certain, I think, dynamic, mannerism, patience, way to be able to take language that's this sort of inside the bubble industry jargon. And all industries, I mean, we're guilty as charged. I'm guilty as charged. And then now you find yourself sort of where you're a bridge. Mm-hmm. And in the course of doing that, yes, the demystifying, the simplifying, but without taking out the nuggets of it, it becomes part of how you go about this. Right. So did you have like that moment where like, huh?
I did, but there's more to the story to get to that.
Let's do it.
Yeah. So while I had, you know, so basically as I was making that shift in my career towards working with financial professionals, my wife and I, Jody, who's here in the studio as well, she and I, we started having babies. Mm. And as they started to grow up.
Financial realities
kick
in?
Yeah.
Okay.
So as they start to grow up, I saw them like, you know, any of us would do if not given instructions, spending their money. You know, if they had money, they spent it.
Well, they're spending your money.
Or my money, yeah. I have a line I use. Once a kid realizes that they can trade the paper and the coins for candy and toys, they like to make that happen as soon as they possibly can. Mm-hmm. And so I'd see them doing
that. Actually kind of like kids tend to be like born traders, don't you think? Like they actually have skill sets and then they lose later on.
Give them baseball cards or something.
Oh, yeah.
Pokemon
absolutely.
Cards.
What's in it for me is actually very well ingrained, I think. Okay.
Yep. They're capitalists at heart.
I agree. I mean, it's really funny, right?
Not to divert, like, but yeah.
Regardless of nationality, you know, religion, socioeconomic, I think at some degree or the other, they're all capitalists at heart.
Born capitalists.
Born capitalists.
So then over the course of just raising my kids at some point I said, you know, I'm tired of watching you guys spend your money. If you guys can save $500, then I'll match it. And they were,
So a little 401k in-house 401k plan. Okay. That's pretty good. Okay.
And then at the time, I didn't really plan it out. It was more of a spur of the moment thing. But then as they start to, my goodness, they're saving their money. I can't just give them $1,000.
I got to match it.
And so over time, that somehow evolved into, you're going to pick some stocks to buy with that $500 that I match it.
Right.
And they were quite young when that started, 3, 4, and 5.
So you put in the small print on them.
Right. Yeah, okay. The fine print.
Here's a 401k plan in-house, you know. But here's a little fine print that goes with it now. You can't just spend it on the bubble gum and the baseball cards and the Disney stuff. You got to invest it in stocks or...
Yep. And it gave us time. It took them a while to save that money. And by over that time... started to have conversations about whatever businesses we saw. Mm-hmm. You know, if we're waiting in line at Chipotle, then we talk about, well, you know, this is a company. This is actually a company that you can buy publicly. And it leads to, well, what do you mean publicly? And so you talk about, well, what is a public company versus private? And as they grew up, we just had those conversations about any business that we interacted with that was publicly traded.
Well, it started getting being ingrained in their DNA to basically look at stuff through
and
that
somebody's
filter.
Tweeting it. How old were they when you're doing it? You said 3, 4, 5.
So when they started just the saving conversation, it was 3, 4, 5. And it's not like we were, hey, 3-year-old, let's get out the stock charts and analyze.
Yeah, I think that's what
MACD
someone was asking.
And, you know, that's certainly not what we were doing, but it's having the conversation.
Well, I was just wondering what colors of Crayola you use. Right.
But even if it's just in the grocery store, just talking about how much things cost.
Yeah. No, man, everything around us. I mean, it's, you know, what's fascinating about what you're saying is I remember I got a degree in economics. My first undergraduate was a degree in economics. And I remember saying this forever and ever and ever. And in fact, I haven't said it for a long time, but it just brought it to mind right away. Is I remember telling people almost flippantly, yes, sarcasm does, you know, is rampant around these parts. But, you know, I used to say to people when I was going through school is I kind of learned everything I needed to learn. When I would go with my mother to the vegetable market or the fish market in Kuwait, like you'd be basically haggling or, you know, call it negotiation and he'll call it haggling, you know, price point, you know, assessing different vendors with different price points, you know, like why and the background and where they get that stuff. And, you know, it's really interesting that you actually have things by just virtue of living that you engage in, that this is not such a foreign topic really.
No.
If you think about it. I mean, yeah, we're standing in line at Chipotle's.
Right.
Well, what's this? Oh, let's talk about, what do you want to talk about? You want to talk about the brand, you know, differentiation? You want to talk about how they basically, their flyers look like, the little stickers that they have. Why do they have surfboards on the wall? Why do they have, like, you know, some skate shoes that are basically there? You know, like, all of this stuff that's part of that environment is a conversation that you could have instead of, oh, my God. Yes, we've ordered your food. Yes. Okay, just be quiet and wait for it to get out. You know, it's interesting.
Can I give you one other example of how brilliant
this is? Are you doing this with your grandson?
So I just want to bring it up. Today, I came in today. We normally watch him on the weekends, but parents had something they had to do today, so my wife's home, so we're watching him, right? And this morning—
How old is your grandson?
He's just turned 5.
Okay, he should be like at what level? He should be like a couple of hundred.
Oh, yeah.
He should should he be saving?
What's his 401k?
You know, because people are living a lot longer. So at the age of 3, what should you
so
have
here's
actually?
How's his portfolio?
So here's a conversation we had just an hour ago. As I'm racing to come into the studio to do this show, he's like, Grandpa, where are you going? I said, I'm going to work. And he says, oh. And I said, don't you feel bad? You're going to stay home and play and I get to go work? And he says, no. And then I said, why don't you go work? And he's like, no, no.
He's got a better benefits package than you do.
And I said, well, why should I go to work? I'm playing with him, you know, and trying to get him going and think about this. And he says, so you can buy me some stuff.
Oh, see, there's the capitalist at heart right there.
And I thought, okay, he's got it dialed in here.
So you have a purpose now.
Kids, and I was one of those, have no sense of value. It breaks, give me another one. I lose it, hey, I lost it. So what? I remember being horrified when we took my daughter up to junior high or middle school. They call it middle school out here. And walked in and I saw this piles of stuff, a mountain of backpacks and jackets and everything, even a saxophone. And I said, what's that? And the lady said, that's the lost and found. You lost your saxophone and you don't know where it is? I don't know. I just lost my saxophone. Get me another one. I mean, that's the world we live in.
Well, we live in a world where, you get participation awards. Right. I mean, yeah. It's not just losing something.
But that notion that it meant nothing. Some kid had actually lost his or her saxophone, and their answer wasn't to go look for it. It was sitting at the lost and found. Their answer, yeah, I'm sure, was to come home and say, "Oh, I don't know where it is. Get me another one."
Okay, so we'll come back to it. Okay, including you, Paul. But at some point in the show, I'm going to ask, like, go back to your childhood and figure out,
me?
Did you ever lose anything in that setting and basically just said, well, I don't know where it is?
All the time. What goes around comes around. That's the pain of being a parent. All the things that you said you would never say, you find yourself saying again to your kids. Or as a grandparent, you get to do it one more time here.
So, JJ, you said that you basically got exposed to it by that subversive teacher at mm-hmm. the age of 7, right? Now, did you put any of that into application when you got exposed to it at the age of 7, or did you not? Or was it just something that then shaped maybe your choice of career path or something of that nature?
Yeah, I did not put anything into it at that age, but I started watching it and keeping track of companies at that age. I wasn't willing to part with my money at that point in time. I was still buying candy and toys. So,
yeah.
But it got me thinking about it. And then in high school, they came around again where there was another is a stock market contest.
Subversive teachers again in high school. Okay.
and then in college is when it really took hold. And I said, okay, this is what I want to do for a living. This is what I want to do for the rest of my life. And had a professor at University of Kansas who basically scolded us. He said, how many of you have funded your Roth IRAs for this year? I'm thinking, I'm living on my student loans. I haven't put that
Roth,
into the market yet. No, exactly.
Roth is the guy that serves me beer at the bar, right? That's Roth.
And he scolded us, you know, what are you doing? You guys, you know, get on the program. You're late. You guys are 5 years late. And he really let us have it. And that, I was just interested in the market and the mm-hmm. stocks and everything, but it also got me thinking on the other side is, okay, he's right. It's, you know.
We had somebody come in.
That's pretty amazing because at that age, again, it's like, you know, I'm going to get my degree. I'm going to get a job. I'm going to have more than I need to do with it. I'm just going to continue to basically spend. And to be honest, the way that the economy is set up, spending beyond your means is kind of a way for that economy to continue to basically prosper. I mean, you're not encouraged to, every 3 years you need to lease another car. You know, the idea, I mean, I grew up in part of the world where you saw ads for kids basically going to the bank with their piggy bank and basically starting a savings account. Like the culture had a different pitch. Mm-hmm. Here, when I came back, that was one of those things that was very blatantly different, is that there wasn't. No. The Sunday morning cartoons basically had multiple ads in them for what you could spend your money on that you don't even have. That's your allowance. So the encouragement and the instilled traits is to expend more than beyond your means or up to your means and spend. So it's interesting to introduce this, and I think the way you introduced it as being an engaging form of conversation, education, exploration, finding out about whether the company or whatever it is an interesting way to engage the interest of a child, that curiosity. Go ahead, Paul. You said you have something to say.
Just reminded by somebody who tweeted in, we had a guest sometime earlier this year, and I wish I could remember his name, but he was a very successful entrepreneur. I think he was in real estate. And somebody asked him, like you do, how did he get started? And he said when he was like 10 or 11, his parents gave him stock. And he looked at it like, what the heck am I supposed to do with this piece of paper? You know, oh boy, my birthday's around and I got a piece of stock. And all the other kids laughed at him. But that started the same conversation.
That's kind of a common thing. A lot of people, especially like, you know, that have a little affluence or means, they do this at a certain point in time. But the question is, how many of those people that receive those stocks basically don't sell it the first time that the stock basically appreciates and go, oh, good,
right,
I can buy that car.
Cha-ching.
Or, oh, good, you know, I really needed that trip to Cabo, so I'm going to just, you know, cash in the stocks that grandma gave me, you know, when I was 15.
I can go see that concert tonight. Yeah.
See that concert tonight. So, okay, so here you are at Chipotle's educating your kids, you know, now what?
Started to teach the kids the basics, and then over time that turned into a little them picking a couple stocks to buy for themselves with their money. And we also introduced a stock market game to the family where each of the kids would pick two stocks and we'd go 12 months. 12 months later, whoever had the best performance on a hypothetical two-stock portfolio.
Real life Monopoly.
Yeah, exactly. And so that got them thinking about, all right, what other companies, even if I'm not wanting to put my money into it, maybe it helps you keep track. No different than, you know, than doing a simulated account yourself. But that's been good because it's helped them think a little bit beyond just what they've bought.
What about if they lose, though? What if they pick something and it goes down and it crashes? What if they picked Enron or something?
Well, that's the beauty of the contest, of the simulated contest, is they don't lose any money in that. Now, their real money, if they pick an Enron or one of those, that's the hard knock life.
So who performed better
in the contest?
Yeah.
I have to admit that Jody and I did not participate in the contest until recently, but I will also say that I'm in dead last in this year's contest. But this year we had they finally rolled enough that they said we had to participate.
I don't think you could have given yourself a better testimonial. My kids have outperformed me.
Read my book, yeah.
That's pretty good.
Aren't there stock picking in real life? I know we're laughing about this, but I've actually read competitions or student stock picking competitions, and they announce periodically that these kids as a group, as across the country, are pretty darn
well,
good at
When I first met JJ, I said, let me tell you about my nephew, Ziad, and basically the fact that he's just freshman in high school now, but basically about 3 years ago, when I said to him, well, what do you want for Christmas? He said, Adam Smith, Wealth of Nations, and I almost fall off my chair.
Wow.
Right? And then right after I fell my chair, I basically had a very emotional, you know, like tug at my heart and said, God, do I still have my copy from business school? And I know I did not, because I would have loved to basically pass that on. It's really interesting when you encounter that with somebody who has an interest in it so young. And, you know, we talk about, I mean, just to be a little sobering here, but, you know, we talk about aging on this show quite a bit. And, you know, one of the common issues with baby boomers, Paul will tell you, is, you know, the reality is that most people do not have enough saved. Even if they did everything right, quote unquote, you know, they don't have enough saved, and they probably have about 10, 15 years from what their savings will last them, given the life expectancy
today. We were the Peter Pan generation. We were never going to grow up.
You're wearing cargo pants and an orange shirt. You're Peter Pan now, too, right?
Yeah, exactly. But, live for today. Live for the moment.
Yeah, but the reality is you can never start early enough.
Right.
I wish I had.
Even if you did have savings and you got hit with the market recently, you know, the last downturn, you probably lost a certain value on your portfolio. So, you know, it's a different reality today than it was.
So what kind of things do kids pick? Somebody else wanted to know that. What do they pick? Do they just pick the toy stocks, the fun stocks, the cool things? Do they
stuff they knew about?
They did pick things that they knew. They were, by the time they were buying stocks, it was, I mean, roughly 6, 7, 8, thereabouts.
Wow, that's still pretty young.
Still very young. And we talked about the toy companies, but they also, by that time, had decided that they thought Toys R Us ran a bad business. I mean,
what? You're
bam!
Wow! Talk about
it.
Wow!
It's also about, you know, making sure you don't, you know, buy a business you don't want to own. I mean, if you start with the story and the product that you like, but also
which is actually not a bad benchmark, right?
No.
I remember investing in Gillette. Okay. It was like early 90s or mid 90s. And the reason I did that is because I read something about the fact that the company was heavily laden with R&D cost in the development of the Fusion razor. Okay? And I literally used it. And I said, huh, this is better than anything else I've shaved with up to that point. So it made perfect sense that this was a good product. And then I realized they hadn't even done an international pitch for it, and they hadn't released a women's version for shaving legs. And I'm like, okay, what's the point here, right? So I looked at the stock, looked at how much that balance sheet was heavily weighed with R&D costs that they were trying to basically get themselves out from under. It was a perfect investment. But it was something you literally touched and used. And I've always gone back to that story because, to your point, yes, it's obviously not as simplified as that all across the industry or all across the financial options that you have out there. But there are things, something like that, that you basically, you touch, you feel, you understand that you can get into.
Right, right.
Well, isn't that the basic Buffett philosophy, is that you buy stuff that you understand and you know and you believe in, and you hold on to it.
Wow, you actually said Buffett, and you didn't put Jimmy in front of it.
No. I'm as dumb as I look. I couldn't be. No.
I'm not as dumb as I look.
I couldn't be.
No, I have nothing to add to that. We have nothing to add to that, Paul. Okay, great. So 7 and 8.
Yep. And okay. Apple, mm-hmm. because they all had iPads at that mm-hmm. point, and they understood that, and they said, so yeah, it was Apple. It was Disney, because they were definitely in the Disney movie wheelhouse. Right. But they also understood, when they were looking at Disney, they were talking about, they had just bought the Star Wars stuff from Lucas, and feeling that, all right, there's a good business for a long time going there.
But these are 6 and 7 year olds debating the value of a business. What are their friends saying? Hey, come on, let's go play soccer.
Yeah, that's interesting. So how much of that permeated beyond your immediate circle, like with their friends and stuff like that? Was this something that became just part of conversation with their friends? Did they keep it to themselves?
Or something that
for the most part,
weird,
they've kept it to themselves. And it's not like we poured over this stuff for hours.
It was just
conversational stuff. But
you can't have dinner until you show me your returns.
Rebalance your portfolio. but it was top when it was relevant, it would come up. So, for example, my oldest, just this past year, he's in eighth grade in San Clemente.
Yeah.
And he heard some of the other kids in his art class actually talking about their math class, where they were in a stock market contest. Mm-hmm. And this was in December. And if you remember, the markets were not a lot of fun in December. And these kids were talking about, well, it went down. We've got to sell it before it goes down more. And my oldest is a little bit sarcastic and a little bit of a smart aleck at times. And he says, you know, you guys are doing
it. I have no idea where you're getting
it. From their mother. says, you guys are doing it wrong.
You know, at some point we're going to buy low. At some point, you won't have the protection of me and Paul.
So. Yeah, she's going to come after you here. Okay. But so their friends, I mean, this, I'm sure there are many people scratching
so
their
did
head.
Did
not everybody's talking about stocks at 6 and 8 or the value of a company. And
so
you're saying
what was the reaction when they heard that?
What's that?
What was the reaction to that when his friends were talking about that?
They just looked at him funny, like, who's this art kid telling us what to do? And he just kind of deadpanned that, if it's a good company, you just want to hold on to it and wait for it to come back up. If it's a bad company, then maybe it'll keep going down.
See, that's amazing. at eighth grade.
Yeah. There's some amazing kids out there. One thing I've learned in this process is, as we've done different events, is you have these 14-year-olds and 15-year-olds coming up to you. I mean, like your nephew, that just blow you away. And there's so much information out there with the internet.
It's interning for an investment firm. I'm like, he's not even driving. And I was like, we're dropping him off at an investment firm in his pants and shirt that he's basically completely lost inside because he's just so frail thin, right? And a tie, and he's got his glasses on, and he's walking in there past the security. And I looked at it, and I'm like, wow, that was surreal. like almost like dropping a kid off for school the first day, but this was like an investment firm.
For work.
For work, right? And right off the 55 in Edinger. And I'm like,
so can we ask you another question? So now the book, let's talk about the, that's your life. What made the book, and what is the
book? What got you the process of writing the book?
So it would have been about 2 years ago. I was having a conversation with a friend of mine that was, that I'd worked with both as, investment professional, and now he's a financial advisor. And I had started to tell the stories about how I'd worked with my kids, and I saw other people do that with their kids. They started implementing it. And I had mentioned to him, I'd like to build out a program. I think we could make a platform out of this. And he suggested, I think it'd make a really good book to start. And I looked at him and I said, okay, I think I'll do it. Mm-hmm. But just a good advice from a good friend.
Well, I want to just share some of the chapter titles because I think it'll give people an interesting take on this. So I'm just going to read them through. And by the way, let's give the website, JJ.
Yeah, it's teachingkidstobuystocks.com.
As simple as it?
As simple as that.
Just like it reads.
Teachingkidstobuystocks.com.
Yep. So go check it out. The book's available.
Yeah, it's available online at Amazon, barnesandnoble.com. In Orange County, you can get it in San Clemente at Beachtown Books and at The Bookman in City of Orange.
And it's available just in print, right?
Hard copy and ebook.
Oh, and ebook too.
Yep.
All right. And we're trying to talk JJ into some audio version, so we'll
see.
And you think you're working on a workbook?
We are working on a workbook.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that will be dedicated. That will be targeted at teens.
So is this a book that kids will read or parents will read to the kids?
Parents will read it and then
implement it,
but we've seen a lot of teens.
We could get you talking to the mic there.
I'm going to share something with you because you were kind enough to give me two copies of the book and you dedicated one to me and one to my nephew Ziad, and I handed it to him. Okay, and it was really funny. He's a total teenager. He's up in the citadel of his room, basically, right, on his computer playing some first person shooter game or something, right? barely communicating, like catatonic almost with me, right? Grunt. This guy, and I said, well, here's this thing, and he looks at it, and I told him about it, and he goes, why do I need a book that teaches me how to buy stocks? And I'm like, this is the guy that asked for Wealth of Nations 4 years ago, right? So he's like, I'm sorry, this is like, what is this? Like a coloring book? It's like, like a Seuss book for me. It was so funny, right? But it was, to your point, there are pretty amazing kids out there and the things that are interesting. Now, his brother, who's like 3 years younger than him, soccer camp, soccer, can't read enough about it, right? That's his point of interest. His wheelhouse is Wealth of Nations 3 years ago, right? I mean, so go ahead.
Okay, he's like, I've already learned all that stuff.
Well, but I gave it I'm kind of maniacal a little bit, so I gave it to him on purpose because I wanted him to actually get to the point where he's reviewing it. So I told you, I said, the interesting thing about what you're trying to do is there may be actually a benefit to having this conversation where it's peer to peer at some point. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
Once you have people that have kind of not necessarily gone through the system, but that are so inclined to then basically, because then it's a peer-to-peer. I mean, you're talking to kids.
Perfect because they listen to each other better than
exactly. Otherwise, parent-child relationship, I mean, they're more likely to listen to grandparent, right?
Right.
Yeah. So, okay, so the chapters, I'm just going to read them. A little about me and my family. Well, you heard about a bunch of that today, and you can find out more in the book. The $500 challenge, a bait and switch. The annual stock market game, Welcome to Shark Tank, okay? Talk to your kids about money. The most powerful force, that's not Star Wars reference, I'm assuming.
No.
The force is strong with that financial advisor. The most important rule in investing, what is the most important rule in investing?
To save cash before you start buying stocks. Make sure you have an emergency fund and your cash reserves set up before you buy long-term assets.
What do you use as a benchmark of that is what for an adequate?
I'd say 3 to 6 months of your average monthly expenses.
So again, stuff that basically is good advice for anybody.
Yep. Right?
Okay. Intro to Investing, Money Trees, Basic Stocks 101, The Lemonade Stand.
Mm.
You want to talk about that?
I had one
more
of those.
Yeah. So what I do is I move people through the...
I mean, summer's coming.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So what I try to do is to prove that it's not as complicated as you think when you look at a company. I take a lemonade stand. I use an example of you and a friend opening a lemonade stand as a partnership, or that's your company, to help go through the numbers like earnings per share and that sort of thing. But I also, as I do it, I use Apple as my other example to compare it to Apple computer, and I say lemon. We're going to compare lemons and apples, and I show all right.
Like far as investing in a fruit company,
right? Exactly.
Apple
two fruits. So we have here's what you made on your lemonade stand. Well, here's what Apple made.
Yeah.
And if, let's say the neighbor down the street offers to buy your lemonade stand for you, and he offers you $500 for your lemonade stand that made $100 in profit this year. Well, he offered you five times.
I hate neighborhood corporate raiders of lemonade stands.
Corporate takeovers
of lemonade stands.
But then I'd show, we'll see the same thing with Apple. If you look at Apple's stock price, it's you can run the same math.
Yeah.
And just try to take the mystery out of it. Oh, Apple's earnings are the same as my lemonade stand's earnings.
Right. The numbers don't mean anything. It's the returns and the projections and the growth. Yeah, that's very awesome.
So do you have to have somebody like your listing your son or his nephew that has an interest in it? I can't imagine most kids. I can't imagine my five-year-old grandson having interest in it. Maybe I'm being biased because I'm not presenting it right. How do I have that conversation
Let me ask you something, though, Paul. Do you feel qualified to have that conversation with your three-year-old?
No, that's probably true.
Aha! That's probably true. You need to read the book.
That's right. Yeah, I guess that's what I'm saying, because our perception of kids is, don't talk to me about anything, much less something that doesn't immediately impact me right now, the TV show, the video game I'm going to play.
Listen, I have an undergraduate in economics. I burned out at the age of 20 doing a master's in marketing at one of the most prestigious marketing schools in California.
Claremont
Graduate School, Peter Drucker, name drop. Okay, there you go. Happy now? Okay, we're done. But I will tell you, right, if I had to sit down and actually share, which I probably know quite a bit by just going through that educational path, but if I was to sit down and actually try to share
in real English with
somebody, I don't know that I'm comfortable enough to do it. I don't know that I trust my own knowledge base even for my own benefit. So the cool thing about this book, and you know, the title is true, Teaching Kids to Buy Stocks, but really the under layer to what I thought about this is that for everybody that feels inadequate, feels uncomfortable with their knowledge of how to invest, which is a knowledge that everybody should be empowered with, whether you use it or not, to be honest, right? But in a simplified format that I can incorporate in my daily life, in my daily thinking, if you really have to be honest, there's probably a lot of people out there, including me, that basically feel uncomfortable with that. And so this book offers you, oh, look, it's a kid's book, but I'm also learning, right? And then I can basically share my knowledge because I feel really comfortable. So I think you bring up an interesting point, Paul. If you had to sit down with your three-year-old grandson and actually try to impart some of this stuff on to it without having the benefit of something like this as a tool, you probably wouldn't.
No, and I wouldn't be good at it, and he wouldn't listen, therefore.
And and so you don't, right? So you wouldn't do it.
So he just thinks money grows on trees, and at some point he's going to get this realization that you got
to
work.
Grandpa goes to work. He disappears.
Yeah.
I see him later. And he has something I want.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
And at some point, and I think that's a difficult transition. You try and give them allowances. You try and show them the value of a dollar and all stuff. But for a lot of kids, particularly in affluent areas, I think money just grows on trees.
How long has the book been out?
It's been out a little over a month. It's May 28th.
Okay. Yeah. So it's really new. And again, you can find it at teachingkidstobuystocks.com.
Mm-hmm.
It's available on Amazon. So go check it out, people. It's really a cool book. And
can I ask one other strange question? I don't want to put you in a difficult place,
please,
if this is too weird. But, you know, the assumption you're talking about, San Clemente, these are successful areas. Parents are successful. They're making money, and somehow the kids are going to learn by osmosis to make money. They're watching
versus the wrong side of the tracks that you live on in Rancho Santa Margarita.
Yeah, well, no, but I'm thinking, you know, obviously we're right on the corner from Santa Ana and other areas.
I just want to paint this picture. You know,
I'm part of the problem.
Something subversive from the comforts of the other side of the green lawn, right?
I'm just wondering if this is a conversation you could have over in Santa Ana with kids who one-parent kids and
more important to have it there than anywhere. More important there than anywhere because really, and if you don't ever want to teach your kids about the market because you don't get it, I understand it. Hopefully this book gives you the tool to do that. But even if it's just having the conversation that this is how much stuff costs, this is, you know, pay your kids an allowance. I have a whole chapter on why you should pay an allowance, because it helps kids to learn that value of money. They don't learn the value of money if you just give it to them. They have to learn it that way. And I mean, really what I'm, the heart of it is for you to, for a mom or dad to take it as far as they want. If they only want to take it to as far as, you know what, we'll watch Shark Tank together and we'll talk about how much stuff costs at the grocery store, that's fine. If you want to take it all the way to the level of, you know what, I'm going to actually learn what some of these numbers behind a company means, even better. But it's built to take you wherever you want to go. You don't have to go all the way through.
And JJ, if the title of the book was Teaching Kids How to Invest in Their Future, and the word stocks wasn't even part of it, nobody would have an issue.
Right.
Because we would all understand the importance of that, right? This just happens to be focused on the financial future aspect and presented in a way that is also building in that lesson of investing into your future. It's just doing it in a specific way. And I think if you think about it that way, Paul, you'll see that it's kind of interesting. It's really across socioeconomics, across regions, across ethnicities. I mean, this is a common tool, skill set that you should be armed this day and age as early as you can get it.
I'll give you an interesting example.
Or have an opportunity to be armed with it. Should you choose not to, then it's up to you.
We had another show here for quite some time by a company called Collective 2, and it was peer-to-peer trading strategies, and it was a company out of San Francisco, and the idea was that there are lots of people around the world who don't live in affluent areas who have still invested the time to come up with an intelligent stock trading strategy, in some cases brilliant, and they might be in Pakistan, or they might be in an inner city in Detroit, or they might be a doctor in Pittsburgh.
Well, micro loans for.
And so the idea was that they would present these strategies, and then you could, you know, follow along with them or whatever. That was the coolness of the site. And what it opened my eyes to is this is not a insider's club. Anybody can buy stock. Anybody can learn to trade. It's something you can do anywhere.
It's scalable.
And yet, I don't think because they don't see people do it in other areas. I saw my parents do it, but I suspect in Santa Ana, they don't see their whoever's raising them doing it. And so, therefore, they don't think it's for them. Stock sounds somehow only for the wealthy.
Consider this, if you will, as almost like a gaming cheat book.
Gaming cheaper.
Right. We're the nest eggs, you know, in World of Warcraft, right? Okay. But it's just with the stocks.
I like that.
Right? I mean, if I told you, hey, you've been playing this game like endlessly, like, you know, you don't sleep because you're on this friggin' online game, right? And I give you a book that basically says, hey, here's some cheat sheets, right? Here's a little arming yourself with some knowledge base, right?
Yeah.
Would you say, nah, I'm not going to read that?
No, you know, that's how you would hook my grandson. He plays a couple of video games endlessly, and he's always looking on YouTube secrets.
Right. So this is why I'm saying, and this is why I was talking to JJ, like, we could take these chapters and actually break them down into something that's digestible like that. The knowledge base, if you take that kid that has been exposed to this and did nothing with it for 3 years, 4 years, 10 years, and then at some point basically decided they were going to get serious about for their financial future, and now are armed, ingrained in them is best part of this knowledge that they retain 25%, 50% of. Right? They're already ahead of the curve.
Right. And think of this. How much effort, brain power, goes in with these kids today, wherever they
Financial go. Market cheat sheets.
How much of it goes into mastering one of these silly video games or online games? Endless hours into that. If you could divert even a fraction of that
something. We need an online game for this book.
That would be huge.
You can subscribe for $9.99 for the cheat sheets every month.
No, I think you're onto something. I really do.
And if you subscribe for a year, then we give you like a kickback that you can put into the stock market. You know, like,
but again, I mean, somehow you're trying to. I applaud the idea of it. Teach kids about money early. Too many kids don't, and it's not just affluent kids.
And it's value, it's not just money, it's
right.
Value.
Exactly. I always tell the story, and I'll tell it again here today since this is partly my therapy session when Rod comes in and I talk
really
about
really quick, we're things. Running out of time.
My dad and I never could talk about money too much. I was kind of a hippie. We lived in an affluent area. Money just came. I never worried about
dad
money.
Dad went to work, and Paul got stuff.
Yeah,
you see the full circle.
Yeah. And I could sit here and just endlessly think about the world and great thoughts. You know, I didn't have to worry
Irish
about
irony.
So, exactly. And so my dad took me aside. This is in the 70s. And as I'm getting ready to go to college, I was accepted to the University of Michigan. He said, how are you going to pay for it? I said, Dad, look around.
You go to work, Dad.
What do you mean I'm going to pay for it? How am I going to pay for it? I'm not paying for any of it. He said, I never went to college. I'm going to split it with you. And I was so mad. We had big fights about it. My friend thought he was the cruelest guy in the world. It was the best lesson he could ever teach me. He said, I can pay for it, but I'm not going to. You're going to have to earn half of it. And I'll split it with you. And that was his big concession.
Matching funds.
There you go.
and so, again, it's that come to realization, that Jesus moment when you suddenly realize money doesn't grow on trees and you have to start learning how to do these things.
So you went to college and, you know, you partook in hash bashes.
Oh, yeah. I just went to endless hash bashes. That's all
he
I
did.
Remember.
He was on the radio. He now that it's legal in California, he admits it openly every week. Right.
No, so I appreciate
it. But it's a Midwest thing. Yeah.
Right. I appreciate what you're trying to do, and I think these are conversations that most parents don't have. I don't see it in affluent areas because money's just too easy, and I don't see it in poor areas because I think it's not common. I just don't think discuss these things.
Before we're getting close to the end here, but I want to just share something that is a chapter in this book. The last chapter, which I told you caught my interest when I saw it, right, is Show and Tell. There's a chapter called Show and Tell, and it says, A Little Wisdom from Kids.
Yes.
Okay? Interestingly, you're writing this book, but then you're bringing in input from kids in your last chapter. Mm.
Right.
So share some of that with me, because I found that to be a very interesting way to wrap the book up.
Yep. I've got to admit, the last chunk of the book gets a little heavier than the front half. The front half is light and funny, and then as I take you through the lessons, there's a little bit heavier lifting.
It's kind of like what we do on the show. Right?
I felt like, let's end it with almost where we started and keeping it as simple as possible, and from the mouths of babes.
Yeah.
And I took one of the quotes I'd already shared about my oldest Max and talking mm-hmm. to the kids at school mm-hmm. That they were doing it wrong because they were selling when it was lower. But he had also said at one point when I was showing them that they had cash coming into their accounts from dividends, he looked at me, he says, wow, so they're paying me an income. I said, yeah. And he goes, if I start buying shares and just save up and buy shares, then when I'm old like you, I won't have to work so much. Those shares can pay my income. And I just...
Eighth grader.
Yeah. He was probably fifth grade at the time.
Wow.
And so I just, my jaw dropped, and I found myself using that quote in my presentations at different events. And yeah, that helped, me realize, all right, we might have something here that really does help.
So how's the book doing? It's only been out a month.
It's been out about a month. It's doing great. We're selling well on online. The events that we've gone to, we've sold what we have. It's doing great. We just need to keep getting the word out.
Hopefully we'll do a little bit of that on the show today. And I really urge you guys to go pick up this book. So go to teachingkidstobuystocks.com. And how can people reach you, JJ?
You can. It's really, really simple.
Through the website?
Yeah, through the website. And it's JJ@teachingkidstobuystocks.com.
Yeah, I mean, I've had the fortune to basically sit down, interesting word to use, fortune to sit down with JJ here a couple of times already. And what you see is what you get. The guy, basically, it's really interesting. I don't know that I ever felt that with the topic at hand that we're talking about, which is a serious topic, something that you need a professional to. I've never felt that it was a heavy conversation, or if anything, I felt excited to find out more. So I urge you guys to go find out more. Go to teachingkidstobuystocks.com. Reach out to JJ. I know he's working on some exciting developments to this. I think this is really a cornerstone that you're going to build a couple of other layers to that are going to be just very beneficial. And again, it's not for kids per se. It's for anybody who does not know and would like to learn about this in a simplified manner of the stock market. Super critical, I think, for anybody. So grab it. What's the book sell for?
It's $29.99 hardback and $9.99 for the ebook.
Okay. And check it out. Let us know what you think. Reach out to JJ, give him feedback. It's only been out a month. I read it. You should too. Thanks for being here, JJ.
Thank you so much.
You have been listening to the Rad Life Radio Show with your host and age explorer, Rad Gontos, brought to you on the one and only octalkradio.net. Join us again next week as we continue our journey of discovery into life's challenges, opportunities, options, and all the latest and greatest things that come with getting older.